Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Thank you for joining us as we head towards our week five game. I can't believe it's week five already. We're going to go to Oakland on Saturday. Today, as we record this, it is Friday, and I'm just baffled we're this far in the season already.
Yeah, and really for us, the season starts at the beginning of training camp. So you have this being the fifth week of the regular season. There were 4 weeks in the preseason, and then they were practicing for another 2 weeks before. So you're looking, this is basically week 11. And that's why I maintain that even though people may say, oh, you want that bye at week 9 or week 10, I think when we're getting it in a couple of weeks, in week 7, mm-hmm. is actually the perfect time, because for all intents and purposes, the pedal has been to the metal by that point for 12 weeks. That'll be the 13th week. That's a good time to take a break. So, you know, the thing is, you just don't want to get ahead of yourselves. You don't want to be thinking about the bye, because there's two tricky games in between now and when that respite comes.
Let's talk about Oakland real quick. I mean, we'll get to Cleveland in a week's time.
Yes.
But Oakland is a much improved team. Not so much defensively. I mean, they did make some additions.
Pass rush is good.
Yeah, pass rush is there.
You got Justin Tuck, Alden Smith, and of course Khalil Mack. And we'll get into this in a little bit, but the challenge for the Broncos' offensive tackles, Michael Schofield and Ryan Harris, is going to be much more substantial than it was last week against the Vikings. And the Vikings did cause some trouble from the edge rush at times. So, you know, the strength of the Raiders' defense is there, but at the same time, they're struggling in the secondary, although Charles Yes. Woodson's having a great year. Not a lot of help for Charles Woodson. He's doing wonderfully on his own, but he's only one guy, and their corners are struggling. There's injuries there, and I think there's going to be an opportunity for Peyton Manning to get some deep shots on Sunday.
Their passing defense allows the most passing plays of 20-plus yards or more.
You've been on that stat all week.
Yes. Well, when you look at your opportunities, it's going to be in the passing game. Their rushing defense is not like league best or anything, but Dan Williams there in the middle. Linebackers are kind of doing okay.
They're in transition. Gone. They let go of Sio Moore this summer, of course, and Jack Del Rio looking for some different things from his linebackers, and we know he's a very good teacher. Mm-hmm. of linebacker play, as he was with some of the guys that were here. Even though he wasn't the linebacker coach when he was coordinator, he's an old linebacker. He knows what he's looking for, and he knows how to get the most out of guys there. So that group's going to come along eventually, but they've got kind of some raw pieces of clay. Other than Khalil Mack, who's a beast. And Khalil Mack is basically playing the role that Von Miller played in Del Rio's defense. Mm-hmm. Strong side linebacker in base package. Hand in the dirt defensive end and in sub packages. It's perfect for him. They have very similar skill sets. You know, Mack is coming along as a pass rusher. He's getting pressure. He's not always converting them in sacks, but he's getting pressure. Actually, the game-saving interception by Woodson in Cleveland was set up by Khalil Mack, closing in on Josh McCown.
And you talk about Del Rio as a teacher, and not just on the defensive side. We learned in our conference call with Derek Carr that he and Del Rio have been having weekly meetings mm-hmm. where they go over some tape and they kind of talk, and Del Rio gives a defensive perspective of what the situational side from the defense. And for that extra perspective, Derek Carr is learning a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of see his progress. He's been throwing the ball a little bit more downfield. He kind of credits that to not getting into deep holes really quickly.
And also his receivers help. I mean,
yeah.
Oakland's wide receiver core last year was a mess. And I think I'm being kind when I say that. Now you've got Amari Cooper, who looks like an 8-9 year veteran out there. Watch the way he cuts on his routes. Mm-hmm. There is such precision. The thing I loved about him in this past year's draft, a lot of people were big on Kevin White out of West Virginia, and they said, okay, White's got a higher ceiling. Okay, yeah, that may be true because White's faster. White's got better physical attributes. But Amari Cooper was ready to step in and be a terrific receiver right now. Yeah. He's about 3 to 4 years ahead honestly, when I watch him, 3 to 4 years ahead of what you'd expect for a wide receiver. And it's not like he's a physical slouch by any stretch of the imagination either. He's, you know, he's got good he's got good size, he's got good reach, he's got great hands. I get the feeling with Amari Cooper that we're going to be talking about him as a Broncos tormentor for a long time to come. And I know that'll frustrate y'all as Broncos fans listening to this podcast, but at the same time, step back and appreciate that this is an exceptional receiver that is going to be one of the league's best and very talented, good head on his shoulders, and he's making Derek Carr better, and having Michael Crabtree on the other side as someone who can draw coverage as well, that's helping Amari Cooper. They're helping each other. It's all, not saying it's quite like Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, but it's a very good combination with an awful lot of potential.
And the other facet for the Raiders on their offense is the running game, with Latavius Murray in the backfield taking the brunt of their carries. The offensive line does not get quite the same success as they do in the pass protection, where they're one of the league's best. So they struggle a little bit in that area, and it maybe makes them a little bit more one-dimensional than they'd like to be. They're best when Murray is, you know, picking up 5-7 yards. First or second down gets them in short yardage situations, because when they get to third and long, they're young, they're inexperienced.
Yeah, had his biggest game against Cleveland, biggest game this year, 139 yards. Struggled last week in Chicago, 3.3 yards a carry, 5.3 yards a carry against Cleveland. That's and again, like you mentioned, first downs, they're huge. And you saw the Broncos last Sunday against Adrian Peterson, until that 4th-and-1 run had him corralled and contained. That being said, I don't think you're going to see the Broncos start in the same way to defend Latavius Murray. If you noticed on Sunday, the Broncos actually opened in a 3-5 package, 5 linebackers. Todd Davis was the extra one to flood the box and give the Vikings a little bit more to think about with getting the ball to Adrian Peterson. I don't think you'll see the Broncos do too much of that, because you've got to take the Raiders' passing game seriously, and that's, you know, that is a very effective part of their offense, probably a more efficient on a game-to-game basis. But they want to get Murray going, and if they can, and they can get the game, they can shorten the game a little bit, then it's going to help their chances of an upset.
This Raiders team is going to be a much better one than the one we've seen in recent years. Past 7 games, all Broncos wins. Broncos average, I think, like 37 points in those games, and a margin of victory of about 21. So it looks like this will be a bigger challenge than we've seen than the past couple of years. So it should be a better game. I know that I think last year they dropped almost 100 points in the combined 2 games. So maybe not quite the same separation there between the Broncos and Raiders as –
Well, what was it? It was 41-17 and 47-14. So a combined, so it was a combined
88
to you know what? I had it right here in front of me, and come on.
It was like, what was it, 17 and like 21?
17 and 14. So it'd be 88. It was 88-31 last year. Defensive touchdown, of course, helped that. Another thing to consider with the Raiders, remember, they started 0-10 last year, finished off 3-3.
Yeah.
So they're 5-5 in their last 10. This is, so
they've almost matched their win total just in the first 4 games.
Yeah, but that tells you where this team really is right now, that they've shed the abject level of play at which they lingered for through the 2012, 2013, and first part of 2014. They've moved themselves up to average.
Right.
The next step is getting to where they're good. And it's funny, I talked about this on Sunday pregame with the Vikings, with Phil Milani and Alan Roach on our pregame show. And we talked about how it was a chance for the Vikings to make a statement, to take that next step in their development. I think the Raiders might view this game the same way, that if they can win, it's a crucial step in them getting to where they want to go. That being said, they're also very frustrated because they had a winnable game in Chicago they let slip. And their poor performance, frankly, was a little bit of a disappointment. going there. I mean, granted, the Bears did have Jay Cutler back in the lineup. As maligned as Jay Cutler is, and as shaky as that Bears team appears to be right now, when Cutler's in there, it's a competent team that can beat anybody. It completely changes the complexion of what the Bears can do. So it was a little bit tougher, but Oakland still had its chances, had a lead late, let it slip. So, you know, they had a chance to take that step with a tough road win, didn't get it. They're going to be looking for a win over a tough team at home this time. And if they manage to get it done against the Broncos, then they could probably linger in contention for the AFC West for a while.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Kansas City is at 1-3 now. I can't remember who. I think they play the Bears this week. So.
Yes, at home. And San Diego's 2-2. You know, eked out a win over Cleveland.
They're beat up.
They'll take it. They got a lot of injuries. They have Pittsburgh coming in, though. That's another bad, banged up team. So, it's a winnable game. And you know, it's a reminder that for the Broncos, they've got to remain on point for these games. It's not, you know, I think a lot of fans are pointing to November and games against Green Bay, Indianapolis, New England to close the month. But you've got to get it done in these games as well, because you know, if you give a game back to the Raiders on Sunday, and if San Diego wins Monday night, all of a sudden you've only got a one game lead in the division. And they've got more, and those teams have more opportunities against you to take the crown themselves. So it's pretty crucial the Broncos come out on point Sunday.
And looking back at last week, we talked about the Vikings a little bit. Broncos finally got a real taste of what their rushing game could be. Now the 72-yarder by Ronnie Hillman did skew the total. It was half of their rushing total.
Yes.
But you got to look at that with a shuffled tackle position at either side. And the progress they made without one of their starters and starting Michael Schofield for the first time ever. Mm-hmm. Some progress, finally.
Some progress. Looked very good at times. Other times it was a struggle. But that's what you expect with the first game with a new offensive line combination. Schofield, I thought, got better as the game went on. And the 72-yard run, that skews the total. But there's another play I look at that really shows potential of the running game. And that was when C.J. Anderson got 13 yards on the last series. And what stands out on that is the key blocks on the play.
Virgil
and Michael Schofield. Mm-hmm. And also, great job by C.J. reading the play and timing his acceleration of the hole perfectly. You let the play flow in one direction, then you wait, and then you cut back against the grain. Schofield takes care of his seal on the inside. Virgil Green takes care of his seal on the outside. That's the kind of run play that you want to see from this offense. And you do that more often, going to get more the players are going to get more confident. CJ came close to a breakaway run but got ankle tackled by Anthony Barr late in the third quarter on Sunday. I think he may well have a breakout coming, even though he's splitting carries with Ronnie Hillman. I think he's very close to having that breakaway like Ronnie Hillman had on Sunday. So we may be talking about CJ Anderson having a big game this week if he can, you know, break through the tackles that he struggled in. He feels like he can get more yardage in part because he feels like he should do a better job getting through those ankle tackle attempts like Barr had.
A breakout game against Oakland for C.J. Anderson. That sounds familiar.
Very. And actually, another thing that to consider is get him the ball in space.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, get him the ball. Make sure he's involved in the passing game as more than just a blocker. Had that 27-yard play to open the game Sunday, and you know he had to adjust for the football and come back for it, but still it was a good way to start the game. And we know what he can do, you know, on screens and dump off. So I think
that's where that 51-yarder last year came in.
Yeah, I think it's going to be key to get him involved in the passing game. You know, get C.J. Anderson operating in space where he can make that first guy miss. That's where his elusiveness really kicks in.
And with the offensive line, we will see another addition of Schofield at right tackle is making his second start. Ryan Harris at left tackle. On that Hillman play, Ryan Harris, as they swept out to the left, he had a block as he was kind of diving for it, and then really opened up the play for him. So, you know, you talk about moving from right to left, and Ryan Harris told me it was like wiping with your left hand.
Yeah, a little bit of a. I wouldn't say he's working a little bit blue, a little bit of a disquieting reference, but at the same time, very accurate, I thought. I think Evan Mathis had a little cleaner,
forgive the pun, reference by saying it's like swinging a bat with the other side.
Hey, there are some great switch hitters.
Yeah.
I've watched Shipper.
We hope Brian Harris is among them.
I watched Shipper Jones for a long time. I mean, that's but they're rare. The guys that can go right to left and left to right easily, that you don't find them very often. But Harris held up okay. Of course, he did play left tackle back in 2013 with Houston, start a couple of games there, split some time with and also was part of a time sharing arrangement with Derek Newton briefly. The other thing that's interesting is Gary Kubiak has mentioned that he wants to get some of his backups some playing time on the offensive line. So he's saying, expect to see Max Garcia get some work at guard.
Tyler
Palumbus gets some looks at tackle. Ryan Harris, he was limited in practice this week. Evan Mathis missed 2 days of practice this week and was limited on Thursday. Now, both of them are expected to play Sunday, expected to start. But if you can spell Mathis and Harris with Garcia and Palumbus for a series or two series or even three series, that'll help them down the line. I think those two veterans, you're talking about maintenance, you're talking about making sure that their nicks don't get any worse, and a way to do that is by getting the backups out there. And I think certainly in the case of Garcia, he was working as a starter through much of training camp in the preseason. So I would think he could handle it. And Palumbus has done it before. It's just a matter of getting him up to speed with his new teammates.
I mean, the question that kind of raised that, I guess it was on Thursday, was Bill Belichick's made this kind of innovation, as he's so famous for, with rotating his offensive linemen, kind of like one rotates a defensive line.
To keep them fresh.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want your offensive linemen fresh? I mean,
there is this – I mean, Ryan Harris joked about it. About he wishes he met the guy who said, who coined the phrase continuity on the offensive line.
Yes.
And I mean, I think there's a lot of truth to being able to communicate well on the offensive line, but I don't know why that doesn't really go into the conversation with defensive line, because I feel like defensive line, obviously you're attacking sometimes on your own, one-on-one, but.
Well, especially in a zone blocking scheme, so much of it is about knowing what your neighbor is doing as much as what you're doing. At the same time, you've got practice snaps to figure that out. And it's not like, and they're speaking the same nomenclature anyway, so it's just a matter of knowing how that guy fires off the snap, what direction he's going in. But if everyone does what they're supposed to do, then you're going to know where that man next to you is going to be. You're going to be able to count on that guy next to you. And the other thing that happens is if you shuffle, then you're better equipped to handle injuries when they come.
Right.
Because, if Garcia had to start right now, he hasn't had any regular season experience. But, Michael Schofield had to start last week. He didn't have any regular season experience. Now you're kind of offering a buffer against that. If something happens to Mathis or Vasquez going forward, you could put Garcia in and say, okay, hey, He's had a series or two here against Oakland. If that's what Kubiak indeed ends up doing, so it's better short term. It's for keeping guys fresh. It's better for the long term for player development.
Yes,
and it's interesting that it's such an obvious notion, but the NFL is a place where groupthink reigns supreme, and I think it kind of bleeds into all of us in the media too. We're like, okay, cohesion, chemistry, continuity. Right. These are the three C's: cut, clarity, and what's the other one for a diamond? Carrot.
Carrot. Yeah.
Cut, clarity, carrot, cohesion, chemistry,
continuity,
and continuity are the three C's of an offensive line, and we've all bought into it. Leave it to Bill Belichick to have a different idea, and as reviled as Belichick may be around here, he does have a lot of good ideas. Even if they seem obvious, like this one. This one seems obvious. Like, why didn't anyone else try this?
Everyone gets so, it's easy to get caught up in the way things are. I mean, why did it take so many years for I guess, a lot of innovations in sports? I mean, the three-pointer's been there for years. And in the 90s, it was a shorter line, and people were going to the paint.
Yep.
Anyway, that leads us into a nice little segment. I guess it's not really a segment. We're just going to be talking. This isn't prepared.
Yes, we actually don't have a script. I know that will shock you listening to this.
You know, in the first episodes, I tried to do a script. And
I remember. It failed miserably.
Yeah, it sounded very scripted, surprisingly.
The moment it got better is when it just became two guys talking, which is talking, which is what a podcast should be. Warts and, you know, mangled sentences and mistakes and all.
You know,
it's organic.
I had a friend who went to I think it was called like Blogs with Balls conference, and the guys who did, I guess they're now with NBA TV, Trey Kirby and some of those guys, they did this podcast for The Score that was really popular called The Basketball Jones. And so he had gone to see them talk, and they had talked about their process of preparing for a podcast. And apparently they were just really well prepared. And he's like, that is what a good podcast should be. And I think I got a little carried away with a little too much preparation as far as scripting.
Well, you should have preparation in terms of knowing your material.
Right.
But that if you're covering a team properly, you know your material.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you're dealing with.
Well, they were covering the whole league, so there's a lot going into it.
But anyway, what we were going to talk about is Mitch Tanny.
Yes.
Broncos Director of Analytics. You'll be able to read this in my mailbag. I was asked a question about Mitch Tanny and where he fit, and so
I was waiting for when this question would come up.
Because,
I mean, we talked about it during training camp, and we asked – or I think you might have asked if Coach Kubiak, if Mitch Tanny, what his role would be on game day.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he'd be on the headset.
And here it went, and so got a question. It's from, I believe it was Mike Birtwistle, a fan of ours from Manchester in England, who asked it. And I passed it along to Kubiak today. And it's the quarter mark of the season. First quarter's over. I don't like to use the term quarter pole because quarter pole means you have a quarter mile to go.
Mm, yeah.
So, and we're certainly not there. And so I asked, hey, you know, about how's Tanny helping him out? And it was interesting. Kubiak said, like, he's there as a resource. Like, basically, he's got all the numbers and probabilities in front of him. And then Kubiak says, hey, I'll say, hey, you know, Mitch, you know, what's up here? And he'll give him the information. And then Kubiak will make his decision based on the information. Kubiak did say that, you know, Tanny, being an analytics guy, wants to go for it on fourth down all the time. And, yes, there are good statistical reasons why you should go for it on fourth down all the time, why you should go for two all the time.
However, it's situational.
Yes, it is.
There's certain things where I think risk is just a little too much, even if it is like 45%
but be consistent. My problem is when I hate when teams, they miss a PAT and then they chase it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they're not, their philosophy is they're going to go for one usually rather than go for two. They, you know, they have a missed PAT early and then they go for two, not because it's the statistically right thing to do. They go for two just because they're trying to chase that point that they missed. They missed out on. The Saints were guilty of that against Tampa Bay back in week two. You'd think Sean Payton would know better than that. But anyway. But it's interesting to see teams incorporate people like Mitch Tanny into it. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting, it's not just on game days. Kubiak, at his press conference, as he answered the question, says, I'm about to go up and sit down with Mitch Tanny for an hour and go over various situations that we might see on Sunday and how we're going to react to them. Now, all this has not meant that the Broncos are going for it willy-nilly, but I will say this. It seems to me that they are more decisive in making their calls. And here's a good example. Go back to week one. Brandon McManus is facing, what, a 58-yard field goal?
I think so, yeah.
There was no hesitation from the sideline. You know, a lot of times you'd see a team, like, maybe they send the field goal team out, call them back, you know, try to figure out what to do. It was go. Go kick. early in the game. I mean, early in the game, and part of that is they when you have a Mitch Tanny in there, you've got someone who's already calculated the risk reward ratio for a situation like that. That I think factors into something that you're hearing from Joe DeCamillis and Brandon McManus. They always talk about 85%. Mm-hmm. What is the outer edge from which they can expect Brandon McManus to hit 85% of his kicks? And when they figure that out at each end, they're able to make a clear decision. Okay, if we're here, we're going to kick. If not, we're going to send Britton Colquitt out to punt. And I think a lot of this is stemming from having someone like Tanny who tells them about something like, you know, perhaps like the 85% concept and the value, you know, the value of kicking and the value or the value of going for it or the value of punting.
Yeah.
And the other thing that Kubiak says that Tanny is very helpful in deciding when to use timeouts.
Yeah.
What situation is the right? And I really say hallelujah to that. He doesn't have the title, but I have said for years that every team needs a game management coach. Someone to say, okay, you know, don't call timeout here.
Yeah.
You're not getting enough benefit from that. Call it here. Like, or call it here. Call it at this point. Don't wait. Like, a team that waits until they get the ball back to call their timeouts, that's statistically, in a late game situation, that is statistically foolish because you're going to save more time overall calling the timeouts on defense because the opponent is trying and is intentionally winding down the clock, and they're going to take as much time as possible, whereas you're in hurry-up mode.
Right.
So you're thinking about saving time, and you can control it a bit. You can clock it on a first down. And so it always drives me a little crazy when I see a team that's got all three timeouts and they decide to hold them back on defense. They don't call them all on defense. They wait. You know, this is usually around when there's like 2 to 3 minutes to go.
Right.
They'll say, "Oh, we want to keep that one there in our back pocket." No, use it. Use it when it's going to save you 35 seconds instead of saving you 15 to 20 because you're already in hurry-up mode. That is the place where Tanny can helps out on timeouts. Much more judicious use. I think it's cool because I remember saying this to my dad when I was at Bucks games when I was a kid. You know, the game, you know, they're calling a timeout at the wrong time. And I'm like, you know, Dad, they need someone in charge of the game management on the sidelines. And now, you know, 20 some years later, here we are. I'm thrilled. I'm pumped, and I'm glad it's here.
The Broncos have gone for fourth downs a few times already.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the fourth and one there, I think, to start the third quarter against the Vikings.
Minnesota was aggressive on fourth downs, too. They had the early fourth down. Mm-hmm. They went for when Bridgewater dove.
I nodded
with approval at that call.
I remember fourth and ones near the goal line that turned into field goals last year. I'm just going to...
I remember seeing one in another game last Sunday, too.
Yeah, Bears game, I think it was.
Of course.
Yeah.
I cringed when I saw that.
I think I looked that up in the middle of the game. I was like, oh, fourth and one. Let's see if the Bears had any short field goals this week.
The New York Times fourth down bot didn't like that call.
No, it did not.
Do you follow that?
Yes,
I do too. I love that's just lovely.
That was really cool when they made that. Was that a Nate Silver? Maybe it was a Nate Silver thing and they just keep it.
I think so. I don't know if Silver did the heavy lifting on it, but I think it was him or one of his guys' ideas. Because, you know, Nate's more of a baseball guy than a football guy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but that, yeah, I couldn't help but look over at the Bears game and see what they were doing. And no comment.
I've made my comment. That's it. I hope we don't see many of those decisions. And then you compare the Broncos, fourth down, fourth and goal, third quarter, perfect time to go for it.
Yeah.
Because it made all the sense in the world to go for it on fourth and goal.
What a play, too.
Beautiful play call. But it made logical sense because you'd go from three ahead to six ahead.
Right.
So while you're taking the field goal, putting the Vikings in front out of play, it's still the third quarter. Think about getting all the points you can in that situation.
Plus, if you turn the ball over with the defense doing as well.
And that's another thing to consider. The defense has a good chance of getting two back for you.
Yeah.
So there is no fourth and goal from the one, fourth and goal from the two. I think we'll see the Broncos going for it a lot in that situation if they face it the rest of the way.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the defense, that allows you a little bit more confidence on fourth downs.
Mm-hmm. But even if you didn't have a holy terror of a defense like the Broncos have, you still should go for it there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 1 yard.
Yeah.
1 yard, 2 yards, whatever.
Especially at home, crowds go. The crowd goes crazy when even if a bad defense is on the field, the crowd goes crazy. Maybe you force a false start and you get them. If it's at the 2 yard line, you force them back to the one. You know, you're creating a volatile element. Even if you don't get it, I'm just thrilled as I think about it that I don't have to tear my hair out. at not going for it on fourth and goal from the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
League's getting smarter.
I believe there were some boos in the Soldier Field crowd when the Bears opted to kick the field goal.
No comment. They still won, I guess. So
they did.
It's yeah, whatever.
Bear down, Chicago Bears. Make every play pave the way to, or is it lead the way to victory? Anyway.
I don't know. Anyway, heading towards Sunday's game, game's at 2:25 Mountain Time, 1:25 local time in Oakland at O.co.
O.co. I keep wanting to say O.co.
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 They should call it O.Coliseum.
Interesting confluence of events at the Oakland Coliseum complex on Sunday.
What's that?
Because at the Oracle Arena, right next door, it's Disney on Ice.
Oh,
so you have the
cancel a flight.
Yeah. so you have the Raiders tailgating crowd, always evocative, mixing with the 4-year-old Tiara and princess dress wanna be like Elsa and Anna crowd. That's
an interesting combination there. You'll get all. All types of people.
I think
those.
I hope some of those kids
that
aren't scared
smart.
Beyond belief.
That was smart coordination of the complex.
Where are people going to park?
Take the
BART. The BART does go there to O.co.
There you go. Problem solved. Well, pretty soon they won't really have that problem with the Warriors. I think they're going to move to San Francisco.
Is that arena under construction yet?
No, but they got the plan approved.
But it's not going to be the one that was going to be basically practically in the water.
Yeah, I think they had to move it.
Yeah.
And I think it was funny. I think that one looked like a toilet. So they had the arena.
Yeah.
And obviously the arena is circular. And then they had this building jutting up right next to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so it's oval with a rectangular building. It looked like a toilet.
It would have been great. Someone could have constructed a handle on it and...
Well, thank goodness the Warriors aren't bad, because then it would be a joke.
The toilet bowl.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll be heading out to Oakland on Saturday. We'll have a hotel report from, I think, TJ Ward, giving him an update. Going home for
going
him.
Going home. He and CJ Anderson going back to their home territory.
Yep. So we'll get y'all caught up right before the game. We'll have a locker room report, and we'll be updating you through the game and afterwards, and then we'll see y'all back here in Denver. Thanks for listening. We will catch y'all next week. Subscribe on iTunes, and thanks for listening.